KCAA 1050 AM NBC News Radio and Express 106.5 FM. The Santa Ana River Trail, which spans 110 miles from the Inland Empire to Huntington Beach, is in for some upgrades in the Corona area. The Riverside County Regional Park and Open Space District plans to fill a 3.5-mile gap through the Prado Dam Flood Control Basin. It extends from Green River Road in Corona to the Hidden Valley Wildlife Area in Norco. Two draft environmental documents have been prepared for public review at rctc.org website. The Santa Ana River Trail is a favorite among cyclists from throughout Southern California. The Riverside Transit Agency is making some changes affecting its rider. The Youth Ride Free program has been extended through December 31, 2026. Anyone aged 18 and younger can ride for free on all RTAs, fixed routes, and Go Micro buses. No passes are needed, only a valid school ID. The RTA is also adjusting several routes, which are anticipated to enhance service, improve connections, and boost efficiency. The Riverside Clean Air Car Share Program recently debuted, a hydrogen-powered car sharing fleet that will provide clean, affordable, and accessible transportation in underserved areas of the city of Riverside. Officials say it's a step towards improving air quality and increasing equitable access to zero-emission vehicles. Weather in the Inland Empire continuing on a warm trend with highs in the high 80s and lows in the high 50s. For NBC News Radio KCAA 1050 AM and Express 106.5 FM, I'm Lillian Vasquez, and you're up to date.
KCAA. Located in the heart of San Bernardino, California, the Teamsters Local 1932 Training Center is designed to train workers for high-demand, good-paying jobs in various industries throughout the Inland Empire. If you want a pathway to a high-paying job and the respect that comes with a union contract, visit 1932trainingcenter.org to enroll today. That's 1932trainingcenter.org.
Now, here's a new concept, digital network advertising, where businesses display your ad inside their building. If a picture's worth a thousand words, your company is going to thrive with digital network advertising. Choose your marketing sites or jump on the DNA system and advertise with all participants. Your business ad or logo is rotated multiple times an hour inside local businesses where people will discover your company. Digital Network Advertising, DNA, a novel way to be seen and remembered. Digital Network Advertising with networks in Redlands and Yucaipa. Call in the 909 area 222-9293 for introductory pricing. That's 909-222-9293 for Digital Network Advertising. One last time, Digital Network Advertising, 909-222-9293.
Meet Barkley. When Barkley smells gas, he leaves fast. When Barkley hears hissing coming from a gas appliance, he leaves fast. When Barkley sees dirt or water shooting from the ground, he leaves fast. Barkley then calls 911 and Southwest Gas from a safe location.
Did that dog just grab a phone and dial 911?
Gas lines can be buried anywhere, so remember to call 911 and Southwest Gas.
Would you like to know the new value of your home in today's market or what it would sell for? Get a simple text message with your home's value by texting your address to 855-600-6000. Get no phone call, just a text. Jim Petrell has the buyers. Text your address to 855-600-6000.
Stuck on the road? Angelo's Towing is here for you 24/7 with over 20 years of experience offering towing and roadside services. For friendly, fast service, call Angelo's Towing at 951-549-8888. Or visit angelostowing.com.
Right now, find a great selection of new Toyota Tundra and Tacoma trucks at Toyota Carlsbad. Save with lease specials or low APR financing and approved credit. Not all buyers qualify. Details at toyotacarlsbad.com or visit Toyota Carlsbad today.
Toyota Carlsbad. I always hear from our clients who hired another firm that they wish they'd hired DNA Financial first. Don't have regrets about your IRS tax case. Just hire the best in the first place.
One owed $150,000 to the IRS and had spent thousands on another firm. We stopped the levies, negotiated a payment plan, and had their penalties forgiven.
And while every case is different, we guarantee that we'll find your perfect resolution and get it done right.
For a free consultation, call us at 866-201-0156. That's 866-201-0156. Then you can say, DNA did right by me.
For over a century, AM radio has evolved to meet the needs of our community. More than 80 million listeners depend on AM radio each month. It's also the backbone of the emergency alert system, keeping us safe in dangerous times. A new bill in Congress would ensure this free, reliable service remains in cars. Text AM to 52886.
Miss your favorite show? Download the podcast at kcaaradio.com.
KCAA.
Live and in color from the NBC News Radio Broadcasting Studios of KCAA, 1050 AM, 102.3 FM, and 106.5 FM, located in beautiful Southern California and in parallel from the Turf Sup Radio Studio in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Thanks for tuning in to the Water Zone Show this evening.
Well, good afternoon, good morning, good evening, depending where you are in this most wonderful world. I hope everybody's having a great day and a great week. I'm Rob Starr, along with Mr. The Inevitable, Mr. Chris Davey. He's my superstar hydraulic man and my friend, and I can go down the list, but that would take up the whole show. So I'll just say, hi, Chris. Welcome.
Yeah, you're very kind, Rob. Thanks for all of that. But, hey, what a funky week it's been out here on the West Coast, man. Rain in the, you know, mid-May almost, and it was drizzly and cold and miserable outside, and I know some of that got to you in Arizona, Rob, because, as you know, my daughter lives in Phoenix area, and she told me.
Yep, and today it's 90 degrees. So
likewise here as well. So
yeah, it's a beautiful day. And we have Miss Chris Austin, who is the purveyor of Maven's Notebook. She is the all-knowing person who I know about water issues that's going on in news. So, Chris Austin, how are you doing, lady?
Hey, I'm doing okay up here in Chico, in the beautiful Sacramento Valley, where we had no rain or drizzle. We had a few few clouds floated by over the weekend, but not much. And it's been quite nice up here. And we have full reservoirs, so the folks that like to recreate on the reservoirs are in a good mood.
Oh, excellent.
You know, and I think we have a little bit of good news for the fishermen, too, I guess. While there's going to be a very brief recreational salmon season this year, I think brief in, like, the bag limit is small, like 7,000. So it's not going to be much of a salmon season. There's no commercial salmon season, so that has been canceled now for the third year in a row. So the, you know, Department of Fish and Wildlife is trying to do something about it. They released a whole bunch of fish, let's see, 3.5 million fall run Chinook into the main stem of the Sacramento River, and so this is, you know, this is helping to boost and try and boost the future salmon population. And also today, Governor Newsom announced $21 million in hatchery upgrades to boost salmon population. So while that doesn't do much this year, we will hope that in the coming years we'll see the results of these efforts.
That would be awesome. I know Mr. Davey will be happy about that.
I'm quite happy about it, actually. Although no commercial, as you mentioned, Chris, no commercial salmon fishing, but sport fishing for salmon with a very small bag limit. So, you know, it's never been my number one species to catch. It's always been trout and sport fishing in the ocean. But I know it's a big deal up there in Northern California, not so much here in Southern California because it's not a local species for sport fishermen, Chris, but up in your neck of the woods it is, right?
It is, definitely. And the closure of the salmon season has just been really devastating for the commercial fishermen that haven't been able to fish, which is, you know, kind of a problem. It's been devastating for them. And they've done what they can to make other money in other ways with their boats. They're taking people out on trips to dump ashes, offshore, or so they're being creative, but you know, they want to see salmon restored, and they want to see, you know, want to have a commercial salmon season again. Hopefully our numbers next year will be better.
Well, maybe let's talk about the water. I mean, just make sure that the salmon have you know, water to swim in here, at least inland when they come inland and for sport fishermen. But we're right at the peak of the snowmelt season, Chris. So what's the story on available water? Is that in the percentage and allocations, things like that?
Well, our water project, both the State Water Project and the Central Valley Project, have allocations of 40% this year, which is not bad, but you know, given that we have full reservoirs and you know, some snow still up there in the mountains, you know, people are probably wondering why the number is so low. But I think that there is a greater caution to keep more in the reservoirs in case next year is dry. I think we used to be able to run our reservoirs down a little further through the year because we are pretty confident that you know, precipitation would come again and it would all fill up again. But over the recent, you know, really since the 2000s, we've learned that that's not necessarily the case. So it's 40% allocation, and we have a pretty decent snowpack up in the mountains, but yeah, we are having another warm spring, and it is melting faster than usual. So, you know, again, we were used to over, you know, but since we've been doing agriculture in the Central Valley, you know, there's this, we're used to a longer snow melt, so water is in the streams for a much longer period of time, melting off slowly. It's much easier to manage that way. And you also then have water in the rivers going in way into the summer. But as it melts sooner and faster, then that becomes a bit of a problem because that water won't be there. And for some water users, that could be an issue because when you have a water right, you have it has like a rate, how much you can pull from that waterway, river, or stream, and it has a time of year. You know, nobody really has a water right that allows them to divert 12, you know, every day of the year. Generally, there's a timing for it. And as water rights get, you know, got more used up, there's some very tight time limits in there for when you can divert your water. So if water is coming down faster, that's going to be a problem for some water right holders.
Yeah, so true. I'll tell you, I'm going to ask you another question, Chris, because I read on the notebook, on your daily digest, I don't think it was today. In fact, I'm not going to put you on the spot, Chris. I think it was yesterday, actually. But I'm going to tell you, I remember a picture I took somewhere, I can't remember what it was, north of Bakersfield, but there's a sign there, and I was standing below it, and the sign says that this was where the ground elevation used to be in 1930 or 1932, I think was the date on that. And I'm standing on the ground, and the top of that post is still 4 feet over my head. So it's subsidence I'm talking about. There was an article yesterday on subsidence, especially as it affects the California aqueduct.
Yes, Yes, and actually they're saying that if they don't, you know, that we need to address the subsidence because it's just going to affect water delivery infrastructure throughout the Central Valley, but also along the California Aqueduct. And they are trying to, well, they're working on developing a fix for the areas that are already subsided. And the Groundwater Sustainability Agency has kind of set up something to sort of help, help stop the subsidence along along the canal where it runs through their district. And it's kind of an interesting thing that they're doing. There is that the farmers are not allowed to pump within a distance from each on either side of the aqueduct. I think it's like a mile or so. So they're just not allowing anyone to pump there. And so we'll see if that helps. You know, theoretically, if they're not pumping underneath it, then that should stop it. But we'll see. They may have to go to putting recharge ponds up there, you know, to sink it in as a way to mitigate that. But land subsidence is becoming a major issue now in the San Joaquin Valley. And they're actually going to be coming out with a new regulation. I'm expecting it in the next month or two. That'll be for, land subsidence because it's just really starting to cause big problems in the water delivery infrastructure. These canals generally run on gravity. There is some pumping in some areas, but the idea is you want to run it through gravity, you know, so you don't have to pay any power. Water is, you know, will just do that for you. But when you have land subsidence and parts of things start sinking, then that really affects that canal's ability to deliver water. And they also have found that, you know, I mean, it's not just the canals, but it's roads and you know, buildings and other things. And they have found that, like, for the utility companies, when subsidence causes a problem, they just have a budget. They just tend to go out there and fix it. Same with the roads. They just tend to go out and fix it. But these are all, this land subsidence is really causing a lot of damage that is expensive to fix. So we'll have a new regulation coming out soon for land subsidence.
Well, it was good to read in that article anyway. I mean, you know, they were pointing out that this isn't a new issue, right? That, you know, things like overpumping, groundwater overpumping, you know, that's been an issue for decades, Chris. I mean, it's not that just popped up on the news, right?
Oh, no. It's been a long-term problem. They discovered it, I think it was back as they were building the state water project, like the 60s or the 70s, I think, and that's when they took that picture when they determined how far things had dropped, and they kind of got to the point where I think the solution was they were delivering more water out to the farmers, surface water, and so they kind of felt that things had were probably under control. But then what happened in the ensuing decades is a lot of people came out, bought property, and started almond orchards about the time when the price of almonds on the world market was pretty big. And so people were very motivated to start almond orchards. And they started doing all of this using groundwater. So whereas, you know, groundwater had up until that point almost been like a backup water supply for farmers because they had surface water generally enough that they needed. All these new farms came in, weren't connected to surface water. They hooked up the groundwater, and that's when the problems all started again. And they continue now because we still use groundwater very heavily. So hopefully the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act will come along and, it's designed to stop that, but we'll see. You know, a lot of interesting things with that. Sort of watching what happens with the courts there, because the first GSA to go on probation filed a lawsuit, and so they have an injunction from the State Water Board enforcing anything, and they're feeling very positive that, you know, they're going to win this case. If they win this case, I don't know what that means. Does that mean that we're not going to try to manage groundwater, therefore everyone can just go back to pumping as much as they want? I mean, it's going to be very interesting to see what is the outcome of that case.
All the cases that are in front of the courts right now are very interesting, what's happening. I hear rumors also that there's some more stuff going on with Arrowhead bottled water.
Oh, yeah. No, that's another one. The Arrowhead bottling people won the first of three court cases that they have over their pumping of water from the San Bernardino Mountains. It appears that the court doesn't think issue with the State Water Board really hinged on how they were taking the water, because the Water Board does not have authority over groundwater except through the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, but they do have authority over surface water, and it was a very, very complicated case, and you could read through these like hundreds and hundreds of pages that trace the water use, because they started pumping that water like the early 1900s in the Arrowhead Hotel. And I mean, there's just so much history and all this. But basically, they had boreholes in the mountain, and they were moving this water, pulling it up and moving it. And so the State Water Board said, well, this is surface water, and the courts are thinking maybe it's not surface water, maybe it's groundwater. So we'll have to see how this all plays out. It's always interesting to see how a court interprets some of these agency decisions when it comes to water, especially if they are not necessarily specialized in water issues. There's a special caucus that I think Justice Ronald Roby put together, where he brings in judges and tries to, you know, talk about water issues and train them on all the intricacies of the water law, because it is very difficult. And I mean, depending on the expertise of that particular judge, we'll see how much weight it gets. The State Water Board will likely appeal, and we'll see how all that goes. But a lot of people not happy with Arrowhead drawing all this water out of the San Bernardino Mountains for decades without a permit. So do
you know if judges have the ability to call their own experts to come in, or other experts to come in and testify aside from the plaintiff or the defendant?
I don't think they can. I think, you know, people present their case. I don't think the judge can call his own witnesses. I've never heard of that happening before.
Can't he then ask the witnesses a question about, or get more clarity or get more in-depth knowledge of it? You're right. If somebody's judging something they have no clue about, it makes it difficult.
It wouldn't be a jury trial. So, then I imagine that the judge might be able in that instance to question the witnesses, you know, themselves. But I don't know. I've never seen that on Law and Order. Well, that's my experience with the legal system is what's on TV.
Well, I was trying to ask the number one source if she knew, so I don't. I had to try. So what's happening? I hear we're going to have some more water coming from snow melt.
Well, no, we're actually having less water from snow melt. But hey, we have cities that are sinking. Large cities that are sinking,
which ones?
Well, you know, they bring up that we do have a few of those in San Francisco and San Diego, but they're actually in other parts of the country. I'm trying to, I got to go pull up this map that showed you where. But yeah, it's groundwater pumping. Is starting to make major cities sink. Along the Gulf Coast, very, very bad there. So, you know, it's
What else is happening in your view of California water? What's the worst situation we're getting into, or are into?
Well.
They still got to clean up with all the fires that they had, with all the contamination out in the ocean and the land.
Gosh. And the algae bloom off the coast of Southern California, I think I saw that it might be finally starting to subside, but a lot of marine life has died, especially sea lions and dolphins. It's the worst toxic algae bloom that they've ever had there in Southern California. The crap from the fires probably exacerbated it a little bit, but it's kind of been a regular occurrence for several years now. So the fire certainly didn't cause it in any way. It seems to be coming. But yeah, a lot of death of marine life. Even a few whales have died.
That's terrible.
It's very sad, and I hope it's coming to an end soon.
Yeah, I saw some of that on television a couple of days ago, and they were showing the sea lions, and they looked like they were turning color. I mean, it was just really sad, and then a bunch of fish were laying up on the sand. So that's a tough one.
Well, hey, Chris, let me ask you a question because I know we're getting close to the commercial break here, but maybe next time you come on, we can start a conversation about what's happening up in the Delta, because, I mean, kind of hasn't been on the news for a while, Chris. I mean, we'd hear, you know, every day there was something from the Delta Stewardship Council or the Delta Conservancy, but it seems to be kind of quiet. Is there a reason for that?
Well, they're in this hearing at the State Water Board, or they've been in this hearing, and so, there isn't anything major other than that hearing, but the hearing goes very slowly. It's honestly, if you listen to it, it can be very, very boring. You know, I mean, I'll be honest, I don't know how people can stay awake through some of these things, but they're really down in the weeds, you know, in the nubs of things. I mean, you listen to some part and you go, okay, but it won't take long before it descends into the weeds. So, you know, there's not a lot of news that's coming out of that. I think they're getting ready to finish up the proponent side of the case, and then they'll start the opponents will start their case in August. So it's a slow moving train.
Well before Rob takes this out, I'm going to give you a shout out, because on Maven's Notebook, Chris, I mean, I think it was last week, maybe it was 7 or 8 days ago, I can't remember, but there was like this Meet the Delta Agency's information sheet. I don't know if you had anything to do with that, or the Delta Protection Commission did it. I can't remember, but a really interesting read. And kudos to you if you had anything to do with it.
Well, I found it and I posted it.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a good thing because, you know, people wonder who these people are and what do they do. So, yes, it's down in the announcement section at the bottom of the front page. So if anyone online or listening wants to go look at it, that's where it is.
Well, Chris, as always, we are privileged to have you come on every single week, to have a person like you who has your ear to the ground and ears in the back rooms of what's going on, and it brings us everybody up to date. And for our listeners, we're talking about mavensnotebook.com. You can go there and become a subscriber. It's an awesome documents to get every single day when you get up. It's on your PC or laptop or your handheld. It's a great way to stay in tune to what's really happening behind the scenes. You can also become a sponsor of that if you'd like and donate a few dollars to that, and I'm sure she would appreciate it. And to the woman who I know who works 150 hours in a 40-hour week, I appreciate that, Chris. You do a great job. So thanks, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Good evening, everyone.
Have a great week, Chris.
All right, we're going to take a little break from our word from a couple of our sponsors here, and we'll be right back with a very special guest, and we're excited about that. So stick around for the second half.
Water is one of the biggest expenses for communities, HOAs, universities, golf courses, and resorts. So keeping those costs under control, especially when rates are increasing while water supplies are being reduced, are often essential to a customer's survival. Managing water requires multiple skills, which is why it's been complicated and difficult until now. AquaTrack brings multiple skills and technologies together to help large system users conserve outdoor water and improve the health of their landscapes. AquaTrack's professionals are certified landscape water managers and certified landscape irrigation auditors. The company offers audit services, upgrade advice, technical expertise, and water use monitoring. We already manage irrigation water for the largest homeowner associations in Arizona, and we're prepared to bring our knowledge and experience to help others, including landscapers and designers. Give us a call and hear how AquaTrack saved one HOA some 430 million gallons of water and $200,000 in annual water expenses. AquaTrack is Arizona-based, and you can reach us at 623-594-8689. That's 623-594-8689. 594-8689.
One of the most time-saving tools I found for my customers is our app and our e-commerce feature. So customers actually have the ability to view all of their quotes in one place. If you contact your Site One seller, you'll be able to log into your account and see all your quotes in one place. And instead of jumping on the phone or waiting for your seller to call you back, you can approve it right from the website, and it will send a message to your sales rep to get it on order and reserve the material. Customers can learn more about these tools at their Site One branch, from their local seller, from their local CX specialist, and from SiteOne.com or by downloading the Site One app.
All right. Well, everybody, welcome back to the second half of the Water Zone Radio Show program. I'm your host, Chris Davey, along with the astute co-host of mine, the all-knowing Rob Starr. Hey, listeners, thanks so much for sticking with us after the commercial break, and thanks to our sponsors just there, including the Toro Company. We got a great guest today, guys. Our guest is quite special because I've known this person a very long time, and I mean back to when she was just a kid. So I'll tell you, I am very happy that she's joining us on the Water Zone today. Her name is Dr. Melissa Matlock, and I'd like to welcome you to the Water Zone, Melissa.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, well, you're so welcome. So let me demystify for our listeners here why I've known you so long, because your parents, both industry veterans, you know, and I've worked with them for decades, and that's how I know you for so long. But I'm so proud of where you are today, Melissa. So let's get into it, and you know, tell us a little bit about your background, what brought you into the industry, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have a undergraduate degree in anthropology, probably not what you were expecting when you hear that I'm in water. I was actually really interested in doing archaeology, and I even, like, stayed a summer up in Big Bear Mountain, living in a tent for 5 weeks. And I realized, you know, the field work of archaeology, that's just not for me. And I wanted to really start focusing on kind of sustainability. So I went to get my master's from Columbia University in climate and society, which is all about, like, taking the science and kind of math involved in the technical understanding and being able to communicate it to a lay audience. So there, that's when I really focus on kind of sustainability, and I learned a little bit more about water law and just kind of environmental benefits for especially disadvantaged communities. Once I graduated, I ended up, you know, applying to jobs everywhere, as most, like, newly graduated students do. And I got a job offer back here in California in Riverside for a renewable energy nonprofit. So I ended up coming back to California, which, of course, you know, Chris, you know my parents, they were probably really, really happy about that. and I worked there for about 5 years. When you're working for a nonprofit, you kind of do everything. So I helped plan events. I did fundraising. That's where I really got into grant writing, writing for community development block grants, writing for Department of Energy and tribal grants. And then from when I was there, I also decided, you know, I really like school. There's still a lot more I want to learn. So for some crazy reason, I decided to go back to school and started working on my PhD. And so I got my PhD in 2019 from University of California, Irvine, and it's actually in public health. So again, not exactly what you would think. I had originally applied to social ecology, and public health was becoming a new school that was, like, separating themselves from social ecology. And I got a call from the new dean, and he was like, we really want you to come here. You can kind of study whatever you want, and we'll give you a full ride. And so I was like, okay, done. So even though it's in public health, it's really focused on how climate and drought and climate change impact populations in California. And so go ahead, yeah.
No, you go ahead. I want to get into what you're doing at CalWEP before that, but just for our listeners and a little bit of background for you, right? I mean, you know, you've all the stuff you said about, you know, how it's really not connected to water, but it is in a sort of a roundabout way. But, you know, you've had a decade of experience with the water industry. I mean, you've been with Western Municipal Water District, and so tell us about kind of the latest update where you've been.
Yeah. So I was with Western Municipal Water District in their Water Resources Planning Department up until August. So I was actually with them for about 7 years.
Yeah.
And in August, I made the move to CalWEP, which is California Water Efficiency Partnership, and I am their director of programs. So CalWEP, for those that haven't heard us, we are a member-based nonprofit that really focuses on maximizing urban water efficiency throughout California. And we are really doing that in a very collaborative nature, and we really work with members, and we are their partner through everything when it comes to policy, to partnerships, to approaches, to research, and we even do training. So we kind of do everything at CalWEP, and that's where I am right now.
Yeah, well, as Rob said before we came on the air, right? We've had CalWEP on the show before, including the current the current executive director, Tia Fleming. That's on there now. And that wasn't too long ago. Rob Starr, do you remember that?
Excellent. Yeah, she did a great job, and we appreciate her coming on. Like I said, we have a lot of connections with a lot of people involved with CalWEP. I was talking about Aaron Morales, who's on your board, does things, and Amy McNulty. I can go down the list of people that we've dealt with over the years, for the water industry. So, great bunch of people. You got the I have a term, and I have to say it. I say it to most of the women I deal with, and it's nothing bad. When people talk to you or see you, they go, wow. And what that means to me is you're a woman of water. And there's so many new, bright people coming into the industry of women, that's amazing to me. And I mean, I think it's great because I'm sure you know, Amy, you know, Chris and I are not 20 years old anymore, and we're sort of hitting the gray wave of people in the industry who are moving on and retiring and such as that. But I feel comfortable with the new people coming in and the younger people like yourself who do a great job. You have a passion. And, you know, last time I spoke to you was at an industry symposium, and it was after the show, and we had a few minutes to talk, and you blessed us with coming on, and that was awesome. So I appreciate you coming on. excuse me. I know you do a lot of things with programs, and one of your flagship things is peer-to-peer program. Can you talk about that and let our people know what that's all about?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for asking. So peer-to-peer is, you know, I work for CalWEP, so it's the biggest water efficiency conference, you know, the most popular one throughout, like, let's just say, the whole world. I'm joking, but, like, we love it, too. So peer-to-peer, it's a great conference. It's a two-day conference. It's actually in, like, 3 weeks. It's at the end of May, May 28th and 29th. It's going to be at Knott's Berry Farm Hotel. And, yes, we're going to have Boysenberry, and, yes, we're going to have Knott's Famous Chicken. but peer-to-peer is really, it's such a collaborative gathering. We do a lot of hands-on, really interactive, but it's also fun. So just some things on the agenda that is just kind of amazing is we are going to have a kind of fire-resilient landscape conversation. So we've got a lot of people around that focus on fire resilience, live in fire-resilient areas, and have to talk about kind of how water efficiency and fire resiliency and fire recovery maybe don't align. And so kind of like, how can we get on the same page to make sure that we are working smarter and developing safer landscape designs, especially before and after a wildfire strike? So that's really interesting. And then my favorite that I'm really looking forward to is our controversial statements, uncensored retiree edition. So you know that's going to be great and transparent and hilarious. And so that's like a do not miss on the first day. And then I'm actually hosting two sessions at the peer-to-peer. One is we have a CII, which is a Commercial Institutional Industrial Customers, Best Management Practices Shark Tank. So it's really where we're going to have groups get together. They're going to be kind of assigned a case study, and they've got to come up with a best program that they can do with whatever resources have been given to them. And then they have to present it to our panel of Shark Tank. And so it's going to be really fun and, I think, interactive, and they're going to get some feedback, and there's also going to be a prize. So that's also really exciting. The other one that I'm going to be hosting is about how water agencies can use AI applications. So, you know, we're going to talk about how we use it for grant applications. We're going to talk about how it's used for conservation planning and how it's even been used to classify those CII customers. So a lot of great kind of innovation in the AI world, and so we really want to kind of demystify it and talk about pros and cons, where water agencies, maybe IT staff, feel about this and concerns that they have and how we can kind of move forward, because AI is the future. So what does that mean in terms of using that for our limited resources?
Do you think, just quick follow-up, do you think that the concern over loss of control on AI can affect any of the water districts and water places around the state?
Meaning
AI takes on a world of its own and makes decisions far beyond humans, and they can take over a whole system. I mean, that's the discussion that's happening now with the U.S. government. I mean, do you see that as a need to discuss that more openly? Not just you, but
in general, yeah. I think that's part of, like, the demystifying AI, and that's even one of the things that we are going to talk about is we're going to do some live demos, and we're going to show, like, how much it actually takes to, like, get the right information out of AI. It's all about the prompt and how you ask for it. But then you also have to, especially for water agencies, you have confidential information. You have customers' information. So you can't just use AI as you might want to. You have to think about the safety of your data and the safety of the information you're putting into AI. So that's definitely part of the conversation that we're going to be having, as well as talking, again, like, what are they hearing from their managers about using AI versus not using AI. There's a lot of conversations about whether or not you should use the, like, auto-recording for recording meetings so you don't have to take minutes anymore. But there's concerns about that because how does it know what should be captured as, like, a comment versus what should not be captured and just kind of said in a room because someone said it, right? Mm-hmm. So we're talking a lot about that. And then there's also a whole different side about data centers using a lot of water. And so it's like, okay, well, if we're going to be using AI, how much of that AI use that we're increasing is going to affect actually water resources in California? So it's a really interesting crossroads, I think everyone's at, especially with how this could affect water throughout the industry.
That's going to be a good event for you, I'll tell you that. Pretty interesting. Chris?
Yeah, listen, Melissa, maybe I can ask you a little bit about, you know, CalWEP again, right? Because I don't want to shortchange our listeners because a lot of them are new listeners since Tia was on last time. So kind of, you know, what's a day in the life for you at CalWEP? I mean, you know, I know you do things like, you know, there's a lot of regulations and ordinances and rules and stuff out there. So, you know, the kind of things you do are like, you know, your members, your agencies, essentially, kind of give us, you know, who are they? Are they water agencies, that kind of a thing? And then kind of tell us, you know, what's the top three or four things you do in a day?
Yeah. So our membership is primarily made of urban water suppliers, but that's not it. You know, we do partner with other nonprofits, and we also allow businesses to be part of our membership. So, you know, that way if, like, a business is really interested in learning about water or they have a tool that's water-related and they want to get in there, they have an audience that's there and willing to understand and learn from all different types of technology. And then we also, you know, some of the consulting agencies, they have been doing this for so long. I mean, Chris, just even funnily, like, most of them know me from my mom and knew me when I was little because they have just been doing it for years. And so it's like you want to have that knowledge base on your side. You want to have that on your team, and we're all going for the same goal. So, again, that, like, collaboration and that working together, it's amazing to have. And all that support and all that tech knowledge and everything, it just really makes our job so much easier and more fun because you get to call and have some ideas and talk about things. And that's part of what I do in a day. Lots of things, but one of them is I'm director of programs. So I'm trying to think of the new programs that we want to do, how we might want to do that. What are the needs of our members? Because we are a member-based organization. There are a lot of new regulations. So we like to say we are an agency's implementation partner. We are helping them through this. So that's whether or not we're developing webinars, which, you know, we've had two webinars in April already related to some things like that. We're coming up with new tools like our CalWEP LAM Explorer powered by WaterView. And so that is actually a free tool for not just CalWEP members, but for the whole state that's going to take LAM, or landscape area measurement data, that's provided by the Department of Water Resources for single family and for commercial customers. And we're going to create a whole viewer for them so that way you don't have to have GIS to be able to look at your data and start working with your data. And that's kind of the first step that you need to do in order to start meeting some of the requirements of the new conservation way of life regulations. So
that's a no-cost tool.
Yeah. With our partnership with Eagle Aerial, who is one of our members. And again, they saw the need and they are very mission driven. And so they partnered with us, and we just had a webinar last week to show kind of the demo of the tool. And as Department of Water Resources releasing the CII data, all these agencies are going to get access to this tool for free.
Oh, that's great. You know, I mean, we've had Jasmine Malloy on the show before, right, from Eagle Aerial.
Jazz is on our board, too.
Yes, I see that. So, I mean, Melissa, this just sounds like a great fit for you at CalWEP. I mean, you know, just from what you're saying, all your background and experience that you told us about a little bit earlier. So, I mean, congratulations. I'm glad you're there. Tell us about some of the tools, you know, the templates and the guides. I know you mentioned a couple of these things, but, you know, they all work within some sort of framework, right? So you have, I heard you talking about this hub and resources. What's that?
Yeah, so we have a compliance hub that he and I put together on our website for members. And actually, you know, we started talking, it was like, if you knew where you wanted to be with the regulations, how in your mind would you think about looking for something? And if you didn't know anything about the regulations and you just got handed it and having been told, okay, now you have to make us comply, how would you start? So we came from like these different mindsets of kind of agency readiness. And so this hub is kind of designed for that large scale look. So we have an interactive timeline that shows the different aspects of the regulation by the different categories: indoor, residential, outdoor, CII outdoor, just CII best management practices. And you can kind of click and close out and you can see what kind of are the near term things you need to be working on. You can click on that item on the timeline and it'll take you to a larger page that shows you the exact regulatory text, our interpretation of the regulatory text, resources we've developed like guidebooks to help agencies figure out how they want to classify customers. It's going to link to the CalWEP LAM viewer and just other case studies and resources that we have there. So that's kind of one avenue there, but then we also have a different avenue of like, you know about the regulation, you know what you want to do, but let's say you need a presentation to give to your board. Okay, we have like a kind of ask a question section where you ask a question and it'll pull up the resources that you want. So you're like, I need to talk about the regulation. You can click on it and it will take you to the resources that we've developed to allow agencies to just basically present the information we've developed for them. You can also say, I need to hire someone. We have developed a template RFP and RFP guidance so you can get the best kind of consultant and the best type of work product possible, because we've already kind of analyzed what information you would need to provide to an agency or a vendor and what deliverables they should be providing to you. So this hub is just, it's going to be constantly growing. It's a living kind of location for all these resources and graphics and just interactive based on what your need is and the user experience.
And your members, they can access all of this stuff, Melissa, through training and webinar series and things like that. That's how you push the info out?
So, yeah, we push the info out in a couple different manners. One is we always announce it in kind of our newsletter that we send out to our members. So, you know, you'll get an email from us when anything new is kind of released. We also have an event quarterly. One is peer-to-peer, but then the other three quarters, they are our plenaries, and they are recorded. They are allowed for virtual and in-person events. So you can go on there, you can watch, and we always demo or show what new products we did. So the one we did in March, I demoed a variance estimator tool that I developed with the California Data Collaborative to help agencies that are looking to see if a variance, like, They use water for horses. How many horses would they need to meet the variance requirements for the conservation framework? We developed a tool to let them understand kind of what that might need to have, what they might need to have. And then if it shows, yeah, actually we are within that realm, then it gives them kind of justification to ask for the budget to do that variance calculation and that more detailed data tracking and data gathering that they would need to do. So we have a lot of different forums, and then in between those, yeah, then we have webinars. So those are also recorded, and we provide the slides and the recordings after the fact to our members as well.
In regards to the webinars, you have something, I believe, called Charting the Course for Compliance series. Can you tell us what that's about?
Yeah, so that is a six-part webinar series. We have already done two of them for this year, but we have partnered with the California Data Collaborative. I used to be a vice chair of their steering committee when I was over at Western, and so when I came over to CalWeb, we were like, we want to make sure we keep working together because there's so much that as both nonprofits we can do together. And so we really sat down and, you know, they talked a lot about the data needs and data organization and ongoing data maintenance that most agencies will need to have for the conservation framework and the new regulations. And so we thought, let's do kind of a series for both our members where we can talk about what it is in the regulations, what data requirements are there, and then case studies. So the first one we did was on CII classifications, and that was great. We had a couple agencies show, one, how they manually calculated classifications and kind of the questions and learning lessons that came up for them. Another one used GIS and kind of utilized their resources with other regulations that were coming up to kind of do, you know, two birds with one stone type of thing and get all their activities done at one time for less resources. And then we had someone show how they used AI to do their classification. So again, a lot of like really hands-on experience there and real life information. And then our second one, which was held in April, was for water loss and kind of how, what are the water loss requirements? What are the standards related to that for the framework? And then what are the things that you need to do if you're just getting started with that? Because sometimes the water use efficiency person is not the person that does the water loss reporting through the state and at that agency. So when you have to now report in your urban water use objective report, it requires a lot of different kind of activities and maybe information that you don't quite know yet. And so we're developing like a lot of resources and just kind of collaborative information sharing to make sure we're bringing the right people together. So those were the first two webinars we have. The third one is actually going to be in person at our peer-to-peer event, and that's one of the ones that I'm hosting, the CII BMP Shark Tank. And then we're going to have two more later on throughout the year.
Okay. Well, real quick, in the last 90 seconds we got here, I always ask this kind of a loaded question, but since you've been in the industry for a while, what do you see as the top three issues that California needs to address drastically?
So one is obviously, you know, from CalWEP, is using water resources strategically and making sure that it's reliable. You heard a lot from Chris and Mavis' notebook about, you know, the reliability of groundwater and some of the issues that we're having with early onset snowmelt. So that kind of climate change and reliability preparedness is really important, as well as making sure we're using water appropriately. The other kind of aspect I would say is a lot of water resources planning and kind of on-the-ground infrastructure is dealt to local agencies. And that can make it really hard because there's so many different challenges, and anything you do in terms of infrastructure is going to impact your rates, which impacts the public at the end of the day. So I think knowing that and making sure that it's not just the local agencies that are making infrastructure improvements, but it's statewide, we're all looking together at how we can make California more resilient.
All right, awesome. We got about 60 seconds left, Melissa, but if our listeners want to know a little bit more, learn a little bit more about CalWEP, where can they go? Where can they get hear about resources?
Yeah, so you can go to www.calwep.org, or you can email me at melissa@calwep.org.
All right, welcome. That's perfect. Guys, listen, Melissa, I can't tell you how excited I was to have you come on the show. And when I told Rob he could feel my enthusiasm, I thank you so much for being on with us today, Melissa.
And I'm throwing your hat
thank
in
you guys so much.
I'm throwing your hat in to become Water Czar of California.
I love
All
it.
All right, everybody. Well, Melissa, thanks. Stay on the line here. We want to chat with you after we get off the air. But what Rob and I always like to say at the end of every show is, please help keep
your planet
blue.
because if you like green, you got to have blue. Good night, everybody. We'll talk to you next week, and have a good, safe weekend.
NBC News on KCAA Loma Linda is sponsored by Teamsters Local 1932. Protecting the future of working families, Teamsters1932.org.
For KCAA.